Hello, I'm Shalom.
And I'm Courtney.
We're the Happy Hipsters.
And this is Almost Nerdy. We love sci-fi, we love fantasy, we love all things nerdy.
And we are about to spoil this movie for you, so make sure you've already watched it. Hey guys, welcome to the second episode of Potter Watch.
Yay!
Chamber of Secrets.
Whoop, whoop.
If you haven't, make sure you listen to our first episode, Sorcerer's Stone. It's a fun episode. We enjoyed recording it, so make sure you kind of dash a little one step back and listen to it. It's fun.
Yeah. We have changed our style a little bit. It's still pretty free-flowy, but yeah. I would say it has a little bit more structure. I think we are really capturing a lot of the fun of Harry Potter, as well as everything that we love, and just digesting it.
Yeah.
So if you were listening to last week's episode, which hopefully you have, and if not, again, I'm going to tell you to go back. You know that we are collecting money for charity. So we are supporting the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, also known as CHOP. We do live in the suburbs of Philadelphia, so this hospital means a lot to us. There's a lot of people who use this. It's one of the best in the nation for children.
Yeah.
So a lot of people do come to this hospital. It's a pretty big deal. And you might not know this, but CHOP is a nonprofit hospital. So they do rely completely on donations. And those donations help them in five different ways. They use it on patient experience, research, education, community outreach, and the Children's Fund.
Wow.
So the Children's Fund is what we're raising money for. And that basically lets them allocate money quickly to those in need. So that's really the difference between being able to save a life and not for those who do not and cannot afford healthcare.
Yeah.
So this really is a big deal. If you are able and willing to donate, we really, really would love that very much. We have already had one donor, which is pretty exciting.
Yay.
So we're raising money until April 9th for this. We are trying to get $250, and then our reach goal is going to be $500. So we're hoping that we can completely surpass our original goal, but we kind of wanted to have something that we felt like, okay, we definitely think we can hit $250 and then have a reach.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Hopefully you feel like you want to give to this cause. It's something that's near and dear to our community, to our heart. So hopefully you feel that as well.
Yeah, it's a great cause. Awesome. So now we're gonna jump into character catch up.
The hype is real, everyone. Get excited. Celestina Warbeck is coming out with her new single, A Cauldron Full of Heart, Strong Love. Can you feel the heat? Getting excited. Oh my gosh, I cannot wait.
Holy house elves. An overly eager house elf named Dobby is doing everything in his power to keep Harry from going to Hogwarts. He does everything from stealing his letters to dropping a cake on Uncle Vernon's client's head to shutting the entrance to Platform 9 and 3 quarters. Luckily, Mr. Weasley has a flying car, which they use to bring Harry out of the Dursleys and to get to Hogwarts. Unfortunately, Ron and Harry crash that car into the Whomping Willow and it just goes rogue. Harry gets framed as the heir of Slytherin, as everyone who he's gotten into an argument with becomes petrified. Harry, Ron, and Hermione brew a polyjuice potion to find out who the real heir is, but to no avail. But they do find out from a diary that Hagrid was accused of opening the Chamber of Secrets when he was at school. No surprises there, as Hagrid has a love for monsters. Ron and Harry follow the spiders, almost get eaten, but then they're saved by the rogue car. After Hermione is petrified and Ginny is taken into the Chamber of Secrets, Harry and Ron force Lockhart to save the day. Once in the chamber, Lockhart reveals that he's a fraud, but joke's on him because he uses Ron's faulty wand and ends up wiping his own memory. Harry saves Ginny before the diary version of Tom Riddle, aka Young Voldemort, takes over her life essence so he can live. Does Harry get poisoned by the Basilisk? Yes. Is it lucky that Phoenix tears heal Basilisk venom? Double yes. Oh, and he frees Dobby from the Malfoy family.
That is... It's a very interesting like movie. Like I Dobby is the introduction to Dobby is one of my favorite things ever. Like just jumping on the bed,
I love
having
him.
The best time ever. Super kind of like, you know, where, you know, Harry says, sit down, and he starts crying. He's like, you're so nice.
I've heard of your greatness, but never of your goodness. Dobby. Dobby.
Yeah, we fall in love with him, but then he also gets annoying pretty quickly as well.
You know what? Dobby is trying his best, okay? He's just trying his
Dobby,
best.
Dobby.
So we'll talk more about Dobby a little bit later. Mm. But first, as every student goes through their OWLs, we will be taking Chamber of Secrets through the RATS, RAS, the Rating and Testing System.
Mm-hmm.
As we said before, you can have up to 5 stars. So basically, Shalom and I will each rate the movie and then we take an average.
Mm.
So you can get up to 1 star for each of these categories. We have scripting and storyline, acting, mm-hmm. cinematography, essence of the book, and the X Factor. X Factor is basically whatever we feel.
Not really. It's like it's what you feel.
It's in your heart when you watch it. Ineffable.
It's that thing that makes a movie special, but you can't really point to it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like,
which is basically what you feel.
Yeah, it's what you feel.
Which is what I said in the first place.
The way you said it, it's kind of like, it's like whatever you feel, but it's like there's something universal about it. You know what I mean? Like
about the X Factor.
You watch something and people just get so, it's like Lord of the Rings, it's like, you know, Batman. I'm talking about the Dark Knight
series.
It's like
Harry Potter.
It's like there's just something electric about it that just brings people together. And I think that's how I would describe
it. That's how he would describe it. Yes. Okay. So let's start rating this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, what would you give this movie for scripting and storyline?
I'll give it 1.
I would give it a full star as well.
Yeah, it's great. It's really well written. You can tell that they were very thoughtful in how they executed everything. I love their scripting for the Weasleys.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think, and this is something that I think I'll have more of an issue with as we move forward, but Shalom watched the movies first and then he listened to the books. Mm-hmm. Jim Dale, we love him. Thank you, Jim Dale.
Jim Dale.
So I often think about what movies did Shalom have questions about where I had to be like, oh, well, if you read the book, you would know, blah, 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 blah. And I think that when you're translating a book into a movie, it needs to make sense. Like you shouldn't need the book for the movie to make sense. And in this case, I think they did a really good job on scripting and storyline. Mm. I think they did a good job. So full star.
Yeah, absolutely.
So acting.
Acting, great. I come back again to the Weasleys. For me, I thought that Mrs. Weasley is the best.
Mm-hmm.
We see her in the first movie, but I thought that her intro, this was a proper introduction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where have you been?
And she's yelling and she has a howler.
Yeah, like all of that, you see more of her personality in this movie. You get to see more of the twins, you get to see more of Ron. I love that you go to their house. And for me, the glue that brought it all together was Mr. Weasley. You know, just his fascination with muggles, you know?
Oh my gosh.
What is the purpose of a rubber duck?
A rubber duck. Oh my gosh.
I thought that the Weasleys are captured really well. Dobby, you know, obviously it's CGI, but the character expression is so, so great. Really well done. Everyone really, like, shows up. Hermione develops a bit. The character develops more. And Emma Watson really does a great job with that. And so You see a whole lot that you can tell we're diving deeper into the characters and the actors are not getting like dragged behind. You know what I mean? They're not like, you know, failing the character. They are executing it well. So full star.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I give it a full star as well. I was really impressed in the growth of the children. Mm-hmm. I think that they really grew up a lot. I think also one of the benefits that they had here was they kept, I think, more props in this movie real.
Because
children tend to act better when I mean, I think everyone acts better, but specifically children act better when there's something real. So, like, they specifically made sure that the Whomping Willow, they're literally in a car getting hit. Like, they're actually getting hit by these big rubber things. And I think that that helped the children a lot. And, like, Aragog, like, he's a real thing that they built so that they had something to really act against. Whereas I will never forget in the first movie, I hate this so much when when Wood and Harry are looking at the snitch for the first time, when they pull it out and he, and Wood is teaching him all, they're like looking in different directions and like the snitch is just doing whatever. So it's like, I'm like, they didn't know what they were doing there. It drives me nuts.
But
for me, who absolutely, absolutely, absolutely killed it was Kenneth Branagh as Lockhart. He freaking killed it. Like, to the point where, like, in the book, I was like, ah, whatever, Lockhart. But his performance of Lockhart on screen makes him one of my favorite characters.
Yeah.
Absolute favorite characters. I'll talk about this in, like, things that I miss a little bit that I wish had been in the movies. But, I, you know, acting out the books, like, in the book when he makes Harry act out the books. And he's like, Harry, be a troll. Like, make your troll roar. Yeah. Like, you know, I think that if Kenneth Branagh was given that opportunity to act out those scenes, I think he would have knocked him out of the park as well. I just think he did a great job as that character. He's charming. He, like, has kind of that suave about him. He just does a phenomenal, phenomenal job. Knocked it out of the park. I can't even believe how good he did. Like, it was amazing.
I agree with that. That's awesome.
So what would you give for cinematography?
Cinematography, I would say definitely there's the improvements. You got a flying car now. You've got giant spiders. You've got just a huge basilisk. So you, they add more like fat, like little graphic things in there. And so I would still give it a one. To be honest, for me, I think for me, it's like, watch that movie is kind of a part of the level of it wasn't like an like new fresh thing, you know what I mean, but it was, there's a level of excellence that they function in accordance to what they could do for that time, and if it does now, it'll be totally different, but for that time, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, watching it grew, like, when I was younger, I was like, I was convinced of those scenes. I was like, whoa, this is crazy. So That's something that I really appreciated. So I give it a one.
I gave it a 3/4 just because I feel like, again, I said this with the last one, I didn't really feel like this was very, like, fresh or new. Like, not from a CGI perspective. Like, I think their CGI is actually pretty good for the time. If you look at the book, if you look at the later movies, you look at the third movie, and these are the ones that I think, like, knock cinematography out of the park. The third one, the sixth one, and a seven, part one and two. I think those cinematography-wise knock it out of the park. They have they have these nice, like, the way that they're framing their shots are really beautiful. Like, there's just, like, a vibe about it. Like, their color palettes that they choose, I think, is, like, a lot more fresh. So that's my only thing I would knock off a little bit for that.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, that they it improves as it goes along. I think I'm just using, like, a relative kind of grading system where I'm like, okay, how is this, like, in relation to what everyone, what can actually be done at that time? And I'm like, it's phenomenal.
What would you give it for essence of book?
Essence of book. I'll give it a one as well, to be honest with you. I was debating with myself whether to remove anything, but I was like, okay, it's not a series, you know, it's a movie. It's, so you need to be done within a certain space of time. So there's some stuff that's going to get chunked out because, you know, sometimes people will talk about pacing and they'll say, oh my gosh, that was too fast. That was too much, or that was too slow. And I think that they had to cut certain things out in order to get the perfect pacing for this movie and all the movie, in fact. And so I think they made the right cut, so to speak, or rather, I'll never know what certain things will look like. You know what I mean? Like, I'll never know, you know, like what you mentioned about Lockhart making Harry like read back stuff. Like, yeah. That would have been funny. But there's also other funny things, like when Harry gets injured and Lockhart is like, "I will heal you," and he's like, "No, not you." You know, and that's there is that in there. Madame Pomfrey is in there. I feel like that was kind of like we actually get a nice chunk of Madame Pomfrey compared to other movies in this movie, and so I would give it a one for that. Capturing the essence of the book. I thought they did what they could.
I took off a quarter star, so I gave it 3/4. Just because I feel like J.K. Rowling has this tone to her writing, and I don't think that that tone is captured in this movie. She has this very, like, almost quirky style. It's very, like, it's very witty. It's very, like, silly. And I think in the first and second movies, I think are very serious. They're very, very serious movies. Like, they're it's like children's serious, if that makes any sense. Like, it's a children's topic, but it's on the more serious side. It doesn't have this, like, almost like wonder fun to it. Like, it kind of does, but not really. Like, I just feel like they didn't really capture that tone. Her, like, tone. I think that they really don't do that probably until the third one. But I have my we'll talk about that when we get to the Prisoner of Azkaban. I'll talk a little bit more about that, but in this one I would just say, like, I don't really feel like they capture her tone. But this one, and I'll talk about things that I, when we get to the, like, what do we think was Trent, like, brought to life, this probably has the most things that I was like, oh my gosh, they brought all these things to life, and I, like, was in love with it. So that's why I gave it that. And what about X Factor?
One.
Me too. One.
Yeah, like, to be honest with you, like, I mean, spoiler alert, I'm probably going to give that to all the movies, to be honest.
Probably, because I could watch them a million times, right?
Right.
It's like, you just get started, you keep going.
Exactly, yeah, because they just did such a great job.
Yeah.
You know, with just creating something that is so enticing and so attractive to watch.
I agree. So I gave 4.5 stars. Shalom gave 5 stars. So the Happy Hipster rating would be 4.75 stars.
4.75
This one did pretty well. I actually think this is a really good movie.
It is really, really
good. I really, really like it a lot.
It's really good.
Okay, so let's move on to talking a little bit about the book versus the movie. So what is something that you felt like the movie, like, completely brought to life? They did it super, super well.
Wow. I think the Weasleys is something that
as
came to life
family
for me.
Or, like, as a family, the house.
The family that had the whole setup. Because they're such a fun, you know, when you listen to the book, when I listen to the book, like, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a fun family.
Yeah.
And just the execution of the characters, the banter, the just that whole, all that interesting, Mr. Weasley, that all came to life for me. I thought, but I mean, I'm going in the opposites. You know, I watched the movie first and then listened to the book. So it's kind of like a weird thing for me. But listening to that, I was like, oh my gosh, like, the book makes the movie come to life. So I'm kind of in this weird kind of headspace. But it really balances out. You know, there are other things like the basilisk and all that. But to be honest, like, the thing that excited me the most was Hanging with the Weasleys. Yeah, just hanging with the Weasleys. It was awesome.
Do you wish a little bit that you got to see the denoming part when they're throwing all the gnomes over the wall?
Oh, yeah. So, there are things like that where it's kind of like little moments that are funny, that would have been hilarious. But I understand why they didn't put that in there. You know what I mean? Like, you don't really, it doesn't make or break thing. So, I get it.
I hear you. I have so many things I feel like this movie brought to life. I love so many parts of this.
Yeah.
I would say the two things, I'm going to break it down to two, though, because otherwise I would say the entire movie. I really, really like the adaptation of this into the movie. Number one, howlers.
Oh my gosh,
thought it was so creative how they made the howler, like, the envelope opens and it's like kind of origami style. So it can talk. And I was like, that is so freaking genius.
It's so creative.
It's not just like you know, I imagined it from the book that, like, the, you know, the letter just opens and then it's just yelling. But, like, to actually have the visual representation of, like, a little mouth, like, yelling, and it's got the little tongue and, like, I just thought that that was so smart, so clever. I was really impressed by that. And then the second thing would be the Chamber of Secrets. And I think that it's definitely more grand in the movie than it was in the book. But I'm all about that. Like, I'm all about that. In a circumstance where you have more room to be more visual, like, I just think you'd be more visual.
Yeah.
Right?
They used it well.
Yeah, I think they used it really well. Did I think that the fight with the Basilisk was, like, a little bit too long and, like, maybe we could have had more time for some other things? Probably. But I also think, again, it's a movie, like, you have to pace it a certain way, like what you were saying earlier, like, you have to pace things a certain way. I could have done without them with the car, like, when Harry's, like, falling out of the car. Like, that doesn't happen in the book. Like, I felt like that was unnecessary. Because it's like, you had him, you had, like, the drama of them falling, of, like, Harry almost falling out of the car and them almost getting hit by the Hogwarts Express. But then you also have the drama of them then crashing the car and getting hit by the Whomping Willow. Like, it, I don't know. It just felt unnecessary to me. But
I think it's just that adrenaline kind of effect. Like, you know, watching it and you don't want to get bored. You're like, you want. So they added these, like, moments, crazy, like, moments. And I get it. I get why they're doing it, you know. And, you know, coming back even to the Howler, like, I actually love... that's part of the reason why I'm in love with their cinematography and some of the choices they made. Really, really clever stuff. Yeah.
So then what about something that was in the book that didn't make it into the movie? Did you have anything?
Wow. I don't... Not really. Like, I mean, they... The way I think is, you know, unless if something is so pivotal, I'm fine with it not being in there. But so I'm totally content with what the movie did there.
I think they hit pretty much everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoyed reading the Death Day Party. Sir Nicholas's Death Day Party. But I'm not against it not being in the movie.
Right.
Like, that doesn't bother me. Right. Actually, what I do miss, though, is in the book, it's a lot more obvious why the students think that the heir of Slytherin is Harry, besides just he's a Parseltongue.
Right.
Like, there's more than that because he's, like, constantly... He's had a bunch of conflicts with Colin Creevy, and then Colin Creevy ends up petrified. He just got in he just got in trouble with Filch, and then Filch's cat ends up petrified. He had just gotten a... I think it's Justin, right? I always mix up Justin and Ernie. They're both Hufflepuffs. I mix them up. I think they're friends. But anyway, I think it's Justin who gets petrified. But, like, he had he was in Herbology, and Justin tells Harry that he's, you know, Muggle-born. So I think, like, it's a lot more obvious. And then you have, like, a straight-up conversation where all the Hufflepuffs are sitting in the library and Harry happens to be there. And he's listening in on them being like, oh, like, look at all these things. And, like, so I think it's a lot more obvious in the books, like, how it's kind of a series of unfortunate events that lead to...
them thinking it's Harry.
Them thinking that it's Harry. So I wish that that was made a little bit more obvious in the movies. That would be my only only thing. That I think. And there's, like, a couple fun scenes that I went, like, I wish that they had, like, an extended edition like Lord of the Rings does, where, like, you just get, like, a few of those scenes where it's, like, it's
you just add more pivotal stuff. I see that.
It's not pivotal, but it would just be fun to have.
Yeah, like, you're right. Like, I think that would have been one way to, like, write it, like, where it's, like, really make it obvious that, okay, Harry is the person they're suspecting. He does do the Parseltongue. So there are other things that make them suspect that it's Harry. But, like, yeah, you're right. That would have been one way to go. That would have also added a bit more time. It's just, it's such a shame that, you know, movies have to be short. But series, like,
although
which
that's
is why,
breaking
like,
the norm now.
That's kind of, like, that's kind of part, one of the things is kind of, like, make it a series. That I would have seen Harry Potter on Netflix, like having it a mini series or something. Like
or each Hulu, season, either
or
one.
Or Hulu, each season being a year at Hogwarts.
Yeah.
You know, and so kind of going through all those different experiences, the different classes, all the different challenges. Like, I would have given some of the things, I'm like, oh my gosh, I would give that chapter like a whole episode. You know, I can see that being 40 minutes.
I do think, like, with the way that technology is now, with the way that, like, entertainment is now, like, you're not, like, you're not held down anymore. You're not constricted by, like, the norm. It's like, there are lots of things that are on Netflix now. There are lots of things that are on Hulu. Like, we have Disney Plus. Like,
totally.
Things that are making huge waves and still having a lot of cultural impact.
Right.
Like, Stranger Things, we did a whole podcast series on that. Like, that was just a Netflix show. And, like, there's a cultural phenomenon around that.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
So, I think that entertainment is just different now.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine them remaking these movies anytime soon.
No, I don't see that. We're hearing all kinds of rumors about, maybe not about this one, but like Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, let's revisit that and redo it. I would not be surprised hearing about Harry Potter being done again. You know,
probably as a series.
Yeah, people want to make money, and this is a. It looks like something that I don't know if fans would love it, enjoy it as much. We're living in a much more critical world, so I'm like, oh my gosh, like it will probably not be loved universally. It probably caused some debate, but it would make money. So I would not be surprised if they announce that, you know, in the next 2-3 years.
Okay, so I have some Courtney Harry Potter hypotheticals for you and me. So let's start with, if you had a house elf, what would its name be?
Oh, Popeye.
Popeye?
Yeah, Popeye.
Why?
I don't know. It just came up. Like, I can see a little house elf and say, Popeye.
I think I would name mine maybe Pokey.
Pokey.
I think that's kind of a cute name.
Yeah.
Like, might be too close to Hokey, though.
Hokey Pokey.
Hokey. I didn't think it would be cute. I would want my house elf, though, to, like, be in cute clothes. But then that would free her.
Right.
So then I don't know. Like, what do you do about that?
You tell it. You're like, wear cute clothes.
Can I be like, hey, you're allowed to wear cute clothes. I want you to express yourself. Yeah. You don't have to be free if you don't want to be. But, like, I just want you to know. Like, I want you to know this.
Yeah.
That you can dress cute. Express yourself, Pokey.
Express yourself.
Express yourself.
Be you. Yeah, or, be like, you say, yeah, be you. Be you, Pokey.
Be you, Pokey.
Dress however you like, Pokey.
Do your best parcel tongue.
Best parcel tongue? Uh-huh. Oh my gosh, yes, yes. I shall see.
What did you say?
Pizza.
A pizza? I'm going to say something to you.
That sounded like bite him or something. That sounded awfully close to eat dinner.
So you can hear parcel tongue now?
Oh, yeah, I can
hear. I was saying, yeah, I think we should get pizza tonight.
Oh, nice. Oh, okay. Yeah, so I was close.
You were close to bite.
Bite and eat. Like, so I'm basically parcel tongue.
So we know that crab and Goyle taste disgusting. And we know from the 7th book that Harry's polyjuice turns gold. And it doesn't taste that bad. So we know that based on your essence, the color of your polyjuice turns and the taste are different for every person. So what do you think your polyjuice would be like?
My polyjuice, oh my gosh. My polyjuice will probably taste like barbecue.
Barbecue.
Yeah, like like smoked barbecue.
What color is it?
Probably maybe like vintage orange. Probably like vintage orange and tastes like barbecue.
Yeah.
I think mine would be bright pink and it would taste like glitter.
Glitter. And how does glitter taste?
I'm kidding. It won't taste like glitter. I think mine will taste like lemonade because lemonade is one of those things where, like, it's sweet, but, like, it's kind of sour. Mm. It's kind of like, look at me, but, like, don't touch me that much. Mm. Like, that's what I think of lemonade.
Mm.
And I think that's me. Like, wow. Look
like,
at me.
Like, drink me, but don't really enjoy it.
Yeah, look at me, but, yeah. like, not too much.
Yeah.
That's lemonade. Yeah. And I'd be like, bright pink. Like, really bright pink.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, bright pink lemonade. Strawberry lemonade.
No, not strawberry.
Courtney does not like strawberries.
I hate strawberries. Even the smell of them makes me want to, like, it makes my stomach turn. I hate strawberries. Ugh. Not, maybe raspberry lemonade.
Raspberry.
Yeah, that one's okay.
Yeah, that's the winner.
Okay. Are you ready to move on to our hot take?
Hot take. Okay, so are you ready to go?
Okay, I'm ready.
3, 2, 1.
You have to explain what the hot take is first. Okay.
So the hot take is when you get to express your feelings within a minute. And so these are controversial perspectives.
Or maybe not so controversial.
Maybe not so controversial.
I don't think this week is very controversial. I think it's just a deep insight, I would say. Yeah.
Well, Courtney is doing 2 in a row, but I'm coming in hot. Like, mine are going to be like... really controversial. So hold on to your butts.
I already have one that, like, get ready for an argument. I think it's going to be next week.
Mm. It's going to be real.
My topic is Lockhart is only successful because he's good looking. Ready? Mm. 3, 2, 1.
Go.
Okay. So I think that her whole idea of Lockhart is kind of like the Hollywood-fi of like of books. Yes, J.K. Okay. Rowling. Like, uh-huh. I think that's what she's trying to prove with him is that, like, in order for something, even if it's a good story, to be successful, like, it almost has to be like Hollywood-fied.
Mm.
And that's basically what Lockhart does. He literally says, like, none of my books would have sold as well if people didn't think that I did it. If people didn't think that, like, someone attractive had done this thing. So I also think that this is kind of ironic because a lot of the issues that people have with the Harry Potter movies is that they think that the kids are, like, too good looking, that a lot of the people are too good looking, that they're not, like, what they basically should be. Like, they really argue that with Hermione, especially because she's supposed to be, like, really nerdy and, like, not, like, good looking, have these huge teeth, all this stuff, and she doesn't look that way, and they let her basically not look that way.
Mm-hmm.
My timer's going off.
Wow. That's good. I think that that's a good perspective where it's, like, I think Hollywood humans, us as human beings, we like, I don't know, that's just how we're wired.
Like, to kind of idealize things, right?
We create this. Like, we make it the way it is. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's such a great commentary on society where it's like, you know, someone like Lockhart, they love him. Mm-hmm. They love him. Like, look at Mrs. Weasley. Mrs. Weasley's like mad.
And Hermione. She's
bonkers about, and all the girls at the school. Yep. And so, like, it's like, it's so weird. And I think that it does speak to, we create those monsters.
Mm-hmm.
We're the ones who are like, you're so good looking, this is so great. Mm-hmm. And then the person who's not so good looking doesn't really succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes a totally different, it speaks for itself,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so I think that's such a great commentary by J.K. Rowling in saying, hey, like, this is what you guys want. This is what people like.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with the movies. The movies are successful because, you know, that's just how they roll. They're like, let's make it, you know, pleasant and close to look at. And so then we are the same ones who complain about it as well.
Yeah.
But then we're the same ones who put a stamp on it. So we're basically screwed.
Kind of dramatic.
Yeah.
I just think it's really interesting because Lockhart, right, he clearly has talent because he is able to find these fantastical stories and then put them in a book in such a way that it's intriguing to audiences.
Right.
An audience want to read it. So it's like
right.
he clearly has talent as a writer.
Mm.
I think maybe he goes a little, he definitely goes too far. I think he probably could have published them as the people who actually did it.
Could have, yeah.
I mean, he does say, I forget what the quote is in the book, but he says, like, so-and-so had a huge, like, wart on her nose or something like that. Like,
right.
No one wants to read that, but it's like, you don't have to show a picture of her, like, just write the book.
Right.
So, but he's basically a fraud, but he does have talent. Mm. So he clearly does have talent, but he kind of uses that talent for evil a little bit.
Yeah, and, you know, honestly, he's just greedy for, you know, popularity and power. And he, because he wants it so much, he's become so skilled at doing that and making, you know, the actual heroes forget what they accomplished and then just telling their stories. It's crazy. It's such a crazy story when you really think about it. You're like, oh my gosh, like this guy, like that's his whole life, like just lie after lie after lie.
Yeah,
and then it backfires, and he's still an arrogant person.
Still arrogant.
You know. Afterwards, I mean, we'll get there, but yeah.
That's Lockhart.
Yep.
So I had a few other questions before we round up. I think something that I really want to point out in this movie, and it starts pretty early on, right, is that the ministry, when they have an issue, it seems like they are fine to just kind of like point fingers, even if they know that it's not right. You know what I mean? And I think like where I'm getting this from is Hagrid's case. And how Hagrid was expelled from school. We see this in Tom Riddle's diary.
Right.
For having Aragog. But Aragog was not the monster. Was not the Basilisk. But yeah, it's like clearly they know that Hagrid really wasn't letting loose the monster from the Chamber of Secrets. Because otherwise, how would he be able to like work at the school as the gamekeeper? You know what I mean? Like, how would he be able to work there? So, like, clearly they know, but, like, they still feel like they have to do something in order for, like, public opinion.
Right.
And I feel like Fudge, like, this is some of the first inklings that you get for Fudge's downfall as we go through the rest of the series, is that he sends Hagrid to Azkaban, like, an innocent man to Azkaban, right? For something that he didn't do, and we know he couldn't do. And it's like... I mean, don't get me wrong. I think Hagrid has some questionable pet choices. But after seeing Fantastic Beasts, you're kind of like, I think that Newt Scamander makes you kind of sympathize a little bit more with Hagrid. And like what is seen as like monsters.
I sympathize a lot like with Hagrid. And here's another just perfect example of kind of like a Lockhart type of situation where Hagrid is... big. He's got a massive beard. He doesn't dress well. He's got like a scary big voice, raspy voice, and so he's like when you see him with a spider, like you know when you watch the movie, you're like, why are you doing this, Hagrid? Then Newt is like, oh, Newt is so good with the animals, you know, and because he's good looking, and so it's like it really just shows how society kind of responds to that. That's why you know it was easier to do a. You know, Grindelwald movie than saying, oh, let's talk about Hagrid a little bit. You know, like, and so, even though, I mean, there is a book on, you know, magic, like creatures, magical creatures. Fantastic Beasts. And so that, but at the same time, like, it's like, okay, like, you know, it's crazy how Newt is. Newt has, like, really dangerous stuff in his suitcase. You know, and.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's like, it's one of those things where probably one of those creatures is more dangerous than anything Hagrid has ever had, you know?
No, Fluffy.
I mean, Fluffy's bad, but not as bad as a...
The Obscurus.
The Obscurus, right? Like, it's not... The Obscurus is...
Like, pure magic.
Pure magic, pure destruction.
Yeah.
Newt has it chilling in his suitcase, right? But he's like, he's cute. He's like, oh my gosh, Newt... Oh, so cool. He's understanding. He's like Doctor Who traveling in the country and understanding all the monsters. And I think that is that's where I think you can see like some of that like
the bias.
Bias prejudice against like someone who's like Hagrid who is like, you know, Groby, no, you know. and we're like, oh, Hagrid, you're so annoying.
Hagrid.
and I think that that's something that, you know, it speaks a lot to society as well. Like, it's how we think and how it's easier to, you know, I mean, in the movies, Newt is kind of not liked as well, but.
Not to the same extent as Hagrid, though.
Not the same extent as Hagrid.
Yeah. And they even say, Diary Riddle even says, like, you know, who's Professor Dibbit or Headmaster Dibbit gonna believe? He's gonna believe me, who was, you know, head boy, who was, has perfect grades, who has all this stuff. Yeah. And he's like, I think in the book they reference that, Hagrid tried to raise, like, werewolf pups, like, under his bed at one point.
Right.
Like, you know, he's just, like, Hagrid's just being Hagrid, just, like, loving these monsters. I also do wonder, though, if because of Hagrid's size, like, he's just, like, oblivious that, like, things that are, like, not dangerous to him are, like, really dangerous to other people.
Yeah.
Because he also, he does have giant blood in him.
Mm-hmm.
So he can, like, I mean, he can withstand all the stunners.
Yeah.
Like, in the books, they try to stun him, and, like,
he's just running.
He can just run. Like, he can just go.
Right.
So, I think maybe that also plays into it a little bit, is he's, like, because he can literally handle it, and other people can't, like, it's not scary. Like, things that would be scary to other people aren't scary to him, so he can see the good side. And then sometimes I also wonder if he's just sympathizing with those creatures because... there is a prejudice against giants. So he is like, he's like, I have good in me. Like, these creatures can have good in them also.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. Yeah.
So something else that I was thinking about in watching this movie this time through is when Harry's down in the Chamber of Secrets and Riddle sends the Basilisk after him. He says, Parseltongue won't help you this time, Harry. But I was thinking about it, and I was like, I wonder if Harry tried to speak to the Basilisk, if it would listen to him, because he does have Voldemort's soul in him. What do you think?
Yeah, it would have worked.
You think it would have worked?
Oh, yeah. After everything else that happens after that, 100%, I'm 100% sure if Harry had decided
to just do try.
It's kind of weird that it, you know, it does hurt him. It does hurt him. And but it's kind of, it's like Horcrux versus Horcrux in the situation, you know. And so
that's true.
But it's kind of like I have a feeling that somehow, somehow, if he had decided to channel
just
that,
try
but
it.
He didn't know how to channel any of that.
That's true.
He could have just been like, "Yo,
he's like 12."
Right, right, exactly. I'm pretty convinced of that.
So I think my final topic that I kind of want to talk about was from an interview that I saw of J.K. Rowling. Oh my gosh, this was so long ago. Like, it has to be at least 10 years ago, I feel like. Maybe longer.
Yeah.
I was always kind of like, The Chamber of Secrets is an okay book. Like, it's all right. Like, to be honest, compared to the others, I feel like maybe, like, not that much happens, kind of.
In Chamber of Secrets.
You could even argue, like, although the fifth one is pretty dark, like, you've got more action happening though in that book than you really have in this book. This book doesn't have a ton of action.
Right.
But she was talking about how she thinks that this book is the scariest book. And the reason why she thinks it's so scary is because of that relationship of, like, giving something your heart, like pouring your heart out into something. And then having it, like, the reciprocal reaction of that and, like, the danger of, like, where you're putting your trust and, like, what you're putting your heart into. And then, like, the fact that it's that they're taking advantage of this young child. Like, they're taking advantage of Ginny, who's just a little girl, you know, and kind of, like, preying on her insecurities. And it's almost like that, like, taking advantage of innocence.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
And she was saying how, like, this is why this one is so scary is, like, because that, like, that's a true thing that happens. Like, people do prey on innocence. They prey on the naivety of children. And they'll take advantage of it.
That's so good. Like, yeah, that kind of freaks me out. Like, it's like, it's a book that writes back to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, there's never anything good that comes back. Like, I'm like, this is what a diary would be if it was like a life. Uh-huh. You'd be like, just there to suck your soul. But like, I, it's very interesting. It's like, you know, it kind of, it's like, oh my gosh, like, you know, you have to be careful where you put your secrets.
Mm.
You know, and I like how it ties to the even the title of the of the movie. It's secrets.
Yeah.
It's like where you place your secrets. And
yeah.
I think it's just as important, you know, like choosing to share your secrets and also where you place them.
Mm-hmm.
And just how, in a sense, when you share your secrets to someone, you're giving a part of your life to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's something very deep about sharing something that's deep in your heart to someone, that you actually give that person the power to take. It takes something from you. You know, that's why secrets are so hard to share, because you just feel like something is being taken from you. You know, and so I love how J.K. Rowling really puts that into like a diary that's alive.
Into like a thing. Yeah. And I think when you look at the character of Ginny,
right,
it makes sense. Like, to be the youngest of so many children, and then on top of that, it's like all of her brothers, I think, have pretty big personalities.
Yes.
Ron maybe is kind of like the closest to Ginny personality-wise, I would say. Like, as far as like kind of being outshone by the rest.
Right.
But poor Ginny, you know, has all these brothers, and she's just like, you know, she's there trying to live her best life. And like, you hear lots of funny things later on. Like, in a later book, you find out that Ginny was like stealing her brother's broomsticks, and that she learns to fly that way.
Right.
Like, she's just as sneaky probably as the twins, but but not as naughty, I would say.
Yeah.
So it's like, I do get the appeal of having someone who devotes all of their attention to you, you know? When it's like, you hear Ron in the first book say, like, you know, my mom always forgets that I don't like this kind of sandwich.
Yeah.
She's got a lot of kids to take care of, you know? So it's like, just have someone have that time and that devotion to you and wanting to listen to you. And then kind of going off what you said about like being careful, like what secrets you divulge and stuff like that. You know, she's talking all about Harry because she has a crush on him, but she's giving this information to Voldemort. And Voldemort then uses that to target Harry later on to try to kill him.
Yeah.
And I think that she does take this concept of secrets kind of a little bit farther, even in the later books, when we see that, you know, secrets are what get Harry's parents killed. Secrets are the reason why no one really trusted Dumbledore, like why he has enemies in his past. Secrets. So it's like she does have this like idea of secrets that I think we'll dive into more.
It's a conundrum of secrets. Like, what do you share?
Yeah, what do you share? What don't?
That's so good. That's really good. Yeah, I agree about Ginny. Like, I think Ginny is definitely like, you know, she's a kid, and that, to be honest with you, like, you know, that's just how kids are. You know, if you don't give kids attention, they'll find it somewhere else. You know, that's why, you know, we live in a world where, you know, you just have to like take care of your own. You know, I think that's even, it might be super hard, but I think it's kind of like when people don't have anyone else to talk to. And if they don't feel like you love them or trust them, they'll look for it somewhere else, and sometimes to bad places. So there's such a, like, it's like a warning to say, okay, don't just share your secrets with anybody. There are safe places to share secrets, but at the same time, like, be a safe place that like someone can be known by you. You know, like, and I think you're hearing a lot. We hear a lot of stories about like suicide and stuff like that. And I feel like, you know, it's people whose voice no one else has listened to. So they'll give their voice to even to themselves, you know, start speaking to themselves. And eventually someone convinces themselves that they're not worth it. You know, and so that's just something that I obviously, this is like I've taken it to level 1000.
Yeah.
But, you know, metaphorically, I think it fits, I think.
I also think with the diary, one of the scary things is, like, the more that you get invested in it,
yeah,
like the more it can take from you and like right. put in you.
Yeah.
And it's kind of that like, I think it's that idea of like a relationship where it's like it is that give and take where it's like you give something and then they give something back to you. And in this case, like, I mean, it's magic. So it's like in this case, she literally becomes possessed.
Right.
And she doesn't know what she's been doing.
Wow.
To that point.
Yeah.
But I think even in other ways, you can kind of see that like on a daily basis in like our own lives. Mm. Like I would say for myself, like what I listen to, like what I'm filling my mind with, you know, those are thoughts and ideas that then are reflected in actions that I reflect. Like, if I hear a lot about one topic, then that's going to change my mind on something. It might make me more sympathetic, might make me not.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's kind of a balance of, like, what you let into your life is going to be reflected in what you do out. And I think, like, obviously this is magic, so it's going to be, like, to the extreme. But it's, like, she's getting involved in, like, a dark object. And then that dark object reflects out of her by possessing her and having her do these evil things by opening the Chamber of Secrets.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I think that's definitely a moral dilemma. Speaking, should I share my feelings and risk being influenced by the wrong forces? Or should I keep this to myself and risk, you know, exploding?
Yeah.
And people, a lot of people applaud the idea of like, oh, that person was so brave and spoke out, and that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But we also need to really, really empathize, you know, just the tragedy of people who feel like they don't have a safe place.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like there are negative forces around them, so they can't talk about themselves. They're going to talk about their sexuality. They're going to talk about their struggles and mental health issues, and so they find themselves boxed in and making the wrong decision. And so, like, nothing, we don't celebrate that, but we deeply empathize. We need to empathize with that, and that should, in a sense, like we've talked about the whole community, the idea of like having it's we create our own monsters as a community.
Yeah,
but I think that if community takes responsibility and says, how can we create a massive safe environment where people just, if people share their feelings, they're in a safe place.
Yeah.
So, because it's dangerous, it's risky.
Yeah.
Some people share and end up worse off.
Okay. So I think that kind of like wraps up everything we want to talk about.
Mm.
I just have one parting thought. It's not really a topic to discuss, but something that I think about probably more often than I should spend time thinking about.
Yeah.
Is when I think about this movie and I think about the Mandrake roots, sometimes I think about what they have to do to, like, chop them up to, like, brew them, and it really freaks me out. So
makes you think of the frog that's, like, hopping about.
Which frog?
Like, do you, like, remember the little toad? Is it a toad? Like, the one that came out of that Harry bought, like, the little chocolate.
Oh, the chocolate frogs. And you don't like them.
I was like, do you eat it? Like,
is it alive?
And it's like, I can picture it, like, just bouncing between my cheeks while
I'm trying to bite it. Sometimes magic is a little scary.
And disgusting. And on that note, we are going to round up.
So again, we are raising money for CHOP, for the Children's Fund. If you would like to donate, every dollar counts. Mm. Everything is helpful. It's literally saving lives. Mm. So if you are able to do that, you can find a link on our bio to the website, our donation page.
Yes.
So if you just go on to the_happy_hipsters on Instagram, you will find the donation page in the website link on our profile.
Yep. Awesome. All right. Thank you so much for joining us on this nerdy journey.
We'll see you next week.